I'd like to start by welcoming the deal that President Obama announced today on the US debt crisis. The deal raises the US federal debt ceiling, cutting spending, and allows the US government to keep paying its bills. Everything I've learned in the past few weeks, especially while on my visit to the United States, shows that the New Zealand government is on the right track in putting firm emphasis on managing our debt and keeping New Zealand's finances in order. New Zealand is actually relatively better placed than many other countries to manage what will remain an uncertain global environment, despite the deal just done in the United States. We're getting on top of our government debt by keeping it below 30% of GDP, and we'll be back in surplus by 2014-15 at the latest. Over the next few years, we have an opportunity to build on solid foundations for faster growth and more jobs. Since we've become the government, we've taken responsible decisions to restrict the build-up in government debt and get government spending and finances under control. Since 2008, the government has turned back the 2008 forecasts of never-ending deficits and soaring debt by setting a path back to surplus by 2014-15. As a result, net Crown debt is expected to remain below 30% of GDP. Front-loading its borrowing programs during favourable market conditions, which will cover the government's obligations over coming months and should make give markets the opportunity to take advantage of the good conditions in 2008. We've introduced the biggest reform of the tax system for 25 years, which rewards work and savings, discourages borrowing and consumption, and significantly tightens tax rules on property speculation. We've overhauled the capital markets regulations and established the Financial Markets Authority, giving investors confidence in market rules and enforcement. We've brought in non-bank deposit takers under the Reserve Bank supervision with minimum capital adequacy and credit rating requirements. It's important during these difficult economic times to take a stable, conservative approach to managing the economy and, above all, get us on a path to longer-term sustained growth. Today I'd like to announce the Cabinet has agreed to amend the Misuse of Drugs Amendment Bill to ban unregulated psychoactive substances such as chronic. This is an interim measure that enables us to get these products off the shelves now. You'll be aware that the Law Commission has proposed a new psychoactive substances regime, and Cabinet will be looking carefully at crafting permanent legislation in the foreseeable future. The products will now carry the same penalties as Class C1 drugs. The risks of chronic and other similar substances are unknown, but the potential long-term effects cannot be ignored. We are not going to stand by while these substances are constantly being created and being made available for sale. The process to ban these substances has been complex, but we've moved as quickly as possible. It's unacceptable to the government that a product that causes potentially lethal risks is available freely to our young people. I'd like to thank the Associate Health Minister, Peter Dunn, for his work in making this happen. I understand he's just issued a press release outlining the details of our approach. I expect this to be law by the end of the week. In terms of ministerial activity, tomorrow I'm at caucus and question time, and in the evening I'll be at Rimutaka for a public meeting. On Wednesday I'm in Wellington at various events, and on Thursday I'm in South Canterbury and North Otago, and on Friday I'm in Dunedin to open the new stadium. On Saturday I'll be attending the dawn ceremony for the opening of the new waterfront facility at Wynyard Quarter, and I'll then go on to open State Highway 18's Hobsonville deviation and extension. When the House resumes tomorrow, the government will give priority to the remaining stages of the Misuse of Drugs Amendment Bill with the provisions I just announced earlier. We'll also be making progress on the Committee of the Whole stage of the Appropriation 2011-12 Estimates Bill, otherwise known as the Estimates Debate, which is an 8-hour debate. Wednesday will, of course, be a Members' Day. Questions? They will. So basically, once the law passes by the end of the week, it'll then be illegal once that substance has been gazetted within 7 days to sell that substance. If someone's in possession of it for their own personal use, they could continue to legally use that, but it'll be illegal for a store to sell beyond that 7-day period. Well, they will have bought it effectively under the old regime, where it was legal to do so. What the government has done is tried to move to ensure that we can have much better information on these drugs. Rather than particularly naming a product like Chronic, there are 43 of those substances currently for sale. If we just name one particular product, then the manufacturers of those products can change an ingredient and have it relabeled, remarketed, and back on the shelves within a few days. So what we've done is put a temporary patch in place that will mean that any product that is named and gazetted within 7 days has to be taken off the shelves. And then the long-term aim of the government is move to a position where no one can introduce a drug in this category unless they can prove that it's actually not harmful to the user. So the burden of proof will be changing as a result of the permanent legislative change. That's right. And we believe within this category at the moment there are 43 substances.
So are these all synthetic cannabis
products
that we have?
Correct.
So they're not herbal high?
No, it's 43 in that particular category. Yeah, so we need to go and have a look at all of this whole area, and that's the purpose of the government taking a longer-term view. But in the short term, we have real concerns about the 43 that fit within this current category and any similar drugs that might be created that are lookalikes to these 43. Overall, we'll go and have a look at the category, but party pills at one level were banned. No, I think it will actually have a long-term impact, because what we're doing at the moment is we're effectively now making it illegal to sell these psychoactive drugs. What we're actually saying is unless you can prove that they are not harmful, you cannot release them. I mean, the current situation is you can come up with a product like this, as long as it fits within the categories and doesn't include illegal substances, they can actually be sold. And so what you've got is you've got a situation where while they might carry an age restriction, as Chronic does, which is you have to be above 18, you're nevertheless effectively selling a legal product, which is sending a message to people that they can take this product, and effectively the government's sanctioning that. We're wanting to send a very strong message that we don't think there's any place for these drugs, and we believe they should be taken off the marketplace, and we're sending a message to young people, we don't want them taking them. I think in the case of Chronic, you're right, I mean, there's been various substances around for some time. In the case of Chronic, it's become much more high profile and more heavily marketed. It's been, I think, a relatively new product that's been brought into the marketplace. But there's been others that have looked like it. And that has been the challenge for the government. As I say, it would have been easy for us to go and name a specific product, but of course, these things are complex chemical concoctions. You can just change one or two of the chemical inputs, and then ultimately the legislation doesn't cover the new product. So we had to come up with a solution that can cover the whole gambit of drugs that fall into this category. And as I say, we want to change the long-term burden of proof.
So at any point you could really make, you know, especially about the party
pills,
in 7 days as well?
I think you could do that, but that's not the intention at the moment.
Because you say unregulated psychoactive,
yeah.
Is that what has to
fits within a particular category that they've got.
Prime Minister, can you clarify the situation around your appearance in Letterman in 2009? How much taxpayer money was used to secure that appearance?
My understanding is none. So basically, there was no payment made to Letterman. As of about half an hour ago, I've been informed that Tourism New Zealand have a PR company. They're on retainer. They pay them every month, irrelevant of what I do. Apparently, when the Letterman show was on, that was one of the projects they worked on. They would have made the payment whether I was there or not.
How much money was contracted to the PR company?
Well, it's a permanent payment. I don't know the answer to that. You need to take that up to Tourism New Zealand.
How much Tourism New Zealand
No idea.
No idea.
Don't know. All I know was it was presented to me as an opportunity to do that. As Minister of Tourism, it was a good thing to do. In my view, it promoted New Zealand. But there wasn't a payment made to Letterman. There wasn't a payment made to get us on the show. These people work permanently for us. They're paid every month, and they have a variety of different projects they work on.
Did you participate in an audition they sent to Letterman?
No. I mean, there was a sort of joke tape, if you like, that was done in my office, but that was nothing to do with Tourism New Zealand.
Well, at least it
Don't know what happened to it, actually.
Was it intended to be sent to Lebanon?
Hopefully, but don't know whether we ever went there. Wasn't done by Tourism New Zealand, though.
But the other company was only employed about 2 months before the meeting with the parents. Were they brought in for that reason?
That's not my understanding. My understanding, you have to take it up with them, but my understanding is that they're permanently on retainer with us. And they work on lots of projects. We've had Tyra Banks down to New Zealand, all sorts of things. That's their job. Oh, well, you have to ask Tourism New Zealand whether it's in their interest to have a permanent PR company, I assume it is.
Well, you're the Minister of Tourism. Surely you have an opinion on whether that's good spending of money.
Well, I think in the US market, you need PR companies. So one assumes it is. But it's an operational matter for them. Well, we were invited on the show. I mean, the reality is that, yeah, obviously people push for that. That's the way it works.
Phil Goff's hinting at further universal savings schemes, right, further than the current KiwiSaver scheme. Is there room in New Zealand to push that out and make the KiwiSaver sort of more compulsory?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, the first, as I'd say, is that I think it's in New Zealand's interest to have the most number of people in KiwiSaver as we can. Second thing is the government's looking at how we can auto-enrol those people that are in the workforce but currently not in KiwiSaver. Whether it would be a good idea to make it compulsory, that was something we asked the Savings Working Group to look at, and they rejected that as an idea. And they rejected it, I think, on the basis that it wouldn't necessarily suit every person's circumstances. I mean, low-income people might find it quite challenging to go in there, and obviously there would be an additional cost on the Crown. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at putting it in our discussion document that would look at how we could work on auto-enrolment of people that are in the workforce but currently not in KiwiSaver. Fairly soon, I think, they're doing that.
Is that the only change to KiwiSaver to be in that discussion document, or are there other changes as
well? No, I think that's my understanding, is let's just go and have a look at the practicalities of how that might work. I think that's a matter for the Reserve Bank, but, I mean, my views on the effectiveness of intervention are very well known.
What about the rate that the dollar is
having? Well, I mean, look, the high exchange rate obviously presents real concerns for those that are not commodity linked and have no imported component of the product that they produce. For the most part, where we face a competitive exchange rate, as we do with Australia, that's to the benefit of those exporting companies. But it's not all bad news when we have a high exchange rate. It certainly takes the pressure off consumers in terms of imported items, price of petrol, and takes some pressure off the Reserve Bank in terms of imported inflation. So, for the most part, it's not an entirely negative story, but it is putting some pressure on those companies. I think it might help in the short term. What's been putting enormous pressure on the exchange rate has been the uncertainty in the US financial markets, and the fact that no one could rule out that the US could default, although that was seen to be very, very unlikely. But I mean, I think the reality is that it's one thing to get a deal in the US, and obviously that's what's happened now, if we accept that that's the likely outcome as a result of the meetings in the United States today. But we still see in the United States a very, very heavy debt burden, and we're seeing quite sluggish growth, high levels of unemployment, and that is putting a lot of pressure on the US economy. And that's one of the reasons why New Zealand assets have been re-rated and US assets are being re-rated negatively. And that position is not changing.
So what can we really do here from this when we face this extremely high dollar? What can actually be done?
Well, I think all you can do is do everything you can to try and make New Zealand companies as competitive as possible. And that means the process and the policies that we've followed. I mean, making sure that we take the burden off red tape, making sure labour markets are flexible, making sure infrastructure is there. I mean, I think if you go and have a look at the track record of countries that have intervened in their exchange rate, then they've been spectacularly unsuccessful. And there's no particular reason to believe that New Zealand would be any different. It's possible you might hit the top occasionally or the bottom if you're trying to go against the trend, but for the most part, it hasn't been a successful strategy for Japan or Australia or Switzerland or many other countries.
There's nothing we can do.
Well, only simply because at the moment you're up against a massive economy that's having substantial financial issues. And so on that basis, they're re-rating the New Zealand exchange rate. Hopefully it'll turn around.
Something else that could push the US dollar down is the third round of
quantitative easing.
Well,
we raised the issue with them, and he just reiterated his public comments, which is that it's not likely at this time.
Prime Minister, regarding the use of parliamentary services funding, we've been told that Connie Harawira is able to use that to fly his parliamentary secretary to work from Auckland to Wellington. It's allowed for on the rules.
Right.
Do you deem it appropriate?
Look, that's something ultimately you have to take up with the Speaker. I mean, he's the person that administers, you know, currently what happens with parliamentary services. I don't know the circumstances behind why Connie Harawira is flying his secretary down. Just don't know.
Just in the general public's view, though, it would be deemed unusual in speaking to other political parties who say they don't do it. They see it as unconventional and unusual as well. How do you think it will be perceived in the public, given some of the publicity we've had over recent years around political use of taxpayer funds?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately it's the responsibility of any Member of Parliament to be able to justify to the public why and when, how they spend money. Yeah, well, again, I mean, that's very dangerous territory for a country that's capital-strapped, that has massive net external liabilities. I mean, no OECD country borrows more of its borrowing from foreigners than New Zealand. So if you put a tax on that, you have to get into the definition of what is hot money, what is legitimate investment in New Zealand. You run the risk that you ultimately force up interest rates, and that's a more expensive burden on the economy. So, you know, I don't think that's, you know, practically going to work. I mean, interestingly enough, if you look in the United States, one of the big arguments that Secretary Geithner, that Ben Bernanke and Obama all made to me was that actually a high exchange rate, you know, is, they believe, something that they're highly supportive of. And the reason for that is they believe it leads to, you know, more benefits than the opposite.
Another way to get off reliance on that hot money could be compulsory savings ratio. Is that one of the reasons you're looking at this sort of soft compulsion thing?
Well, because we think it's in the best interest to have as many people in the scheme as possible, because we think it's a good scheme. I mean, ultimately, you're getting subsidised by the government, you're getting subsidised by your employer, for the most part, generally. I mean, one of the reasons why it may not necessarily lift national savings just because you have had compulsory saving is because if people dissave in another form, it doesn't necessarily overall lift savings. So you just got to be a bit careful there.
But could capital saving go properly into
it? It might, or they might just run higher credit card bills or bigger personal loans. Well, again, I think all government departments or quasi-government departments need to be careful and just need to be cautious in their activity. I mean, I accept that the DMO deals with a lot of banks for a variety of different reasons. And so, you know, just because they go out for lunch with a bank isn't necessarily sinister. I mean, they might be, you know, getting informed about what's happening in the markets. There's a variety of different reasons why they meet with them. So I think it's just a matter of them being careful and recognising that, you know, this is going to be public information, and they should be able to justify, you know, what is ultimately released. Hard to, yes.
Would you expect that list to get shorter now that the new secretary is going to be publishing that list?
Well, the list will get shorter. And that's the experience of every time there's greater transparency in the expenses debate. I mean, ultimately, sunlight's, you know, the greatest disinfectant, isn't it? News to me. Typical win. Well, I've never had a discussion with Rodney Hyde about that matter. I'm not aware of any minister that has, and it fits in the world of fantasy that surrounds Mr. Peters. No, I don't think he'd want to do that, actually. I mean, he's been at through and through. I don't think it was a serious issue.